Hi, this is Brennan Davis from Bedrock Games and the Bedrock blog, and today I'm continuing talking about living adventures, and in particular the sort of Wuxia sandboxes that I've been running. I want to speak in particular about an idea called GM immersion, which isn't a new idea. It's just the handy label I'm affixing to it for the purposes of this discussion. And before I get to that, I do want to sort of talk about the things that lead up to this. I was having a discussion with somebody after a session that I ran, not somebody that was in the session, just another GM and designer, and we were talking about how I prep between sessions, and that's kind of what led to this topic. I think I addressed that a little bit last podcast, but I'm going to continue here talking about how I prep between sessions. Now, one thing to keep in mind is this is not me telling you this is what you must do. These are procedures that'll work 100% of the time or even 80% of the time for you. These are just the things that I do between sessions when I'm running a sandbox. And so the first thing is to consider what to do after a session. So say you just ran a session. I know you probably want me to start with what you do before a session, but I think this is a better starting point. Say you have an existing sandbox campaign, and just to talk about the one that I just ran, the party was traveling, through the Banyan region of the Wandering Heroes of Ogregate setting, and they were making survival rolls to go through the wilderness, and they had an encounter with some tigers. Now, prior to this session, I had a note, which was my sort of post-session prep, that a woman who's been trying to assassinate them, Madame Hamaya, hired somebody named Golden Ox in order to kill the party. Now, I didn't know anything about Golden Ox. I just had the name. Normally I would have prepared him during the week. Because I didn't do that, I told one of my players to roll a d10, and that's what I was going to use to generate a random NPC, which is very risky. This is a potentially lethal campaign. So just keep in mind, I was doing something that was risky. I got a 9, so it was a chi rank 9 character. The players talked their way out of it. They made their way to through the region they were trying to walk to, and along the way, they wanted to greet the sect leader that lived in that area. Without going into too many details, they accidentally embarrassed the sect leader twice. So one of the disciples decided to go and poison the party to prevent them from spreading word of the embarrassment. And they stopped the attack. One of the players was poisoned, but they got the antidote from the woman. And then the player that was poisoned, who has a particular issue with poisoners, cut off her arms and sent her back to the sect. There was a very prolonged exchange here, but he cut off her arms and sent her back to the sect. And then they finally traveled to the rest of the wilderness. They had a minor encounter with some Dehuan priests, and then they reached their destination. And so this was a somewhat shorter session because I had to start an hour late. I had an appointment earlier, so I had to start later. And still, they got quite a bit done. They made it to their destination. So after the session, this is my prep. I finished the session. I have notes. In this case, I have one of the players taking notes, and he gives me notes, and then I generate a session log from that. If I don't have a player doing that, I'm taking more extensive notes than I would otherwise, and I generate a session log from that. So the first thing to do is to generate your session log. That's really important. I try to do it within a day, maybe 2 or 3 days if I can. Some days I've waited a week and you can do that, but the longer you wait, the more details you forget. And the session logs are what really help you to maintain consistency in a sandbox campaign. You might not always adhere to it. Maybe a detail gets lost and there's inconsistency and you move on, and that's fine. I'm not saying it has to be this pristine thing where, you know, it's everywhere you have a, you know, you're keeping rigorous records of everything. It's up to you how detailed you want to go there. But the point is that you are doing these session logs so you can go back to them. And I promise you, this will be important down the road. Say you're 20, 25, 30, 40 sessions in and something happened in the second session. You're not going to remember what that was, and the players aren't going to remember what that was, and you might need to go back and check that out. The next thing that you have to do is you have to record any deaths or any important things that have happened with NPCs. So nobody died, but somebody lost their arms. So next to that NPC, I'm going to put that she's missing both of her arms now. If somebody had died, I'd put them on the list of the living and the dead that I have. And so that's a very important thing to do as well. The other thing that I do is, you know, assess things like, okay, did any grudges develop during this session? Obviously, cutting off the arms of a member of a sect is going to generate a grudge. And so in the case of this particular person who's from Shaozhe sect, I put Shaozhe sect in twice on the grudge table. And I put them in a spot where I don't usually have grudges on that table, because I figured this is going to be a particularly likely grudge to come up. And if you're not using grudge tables, that's fine, but just make sure that you have some way of remembering what floating grudges are going on. And so now that I have all that, the next thing I need to do is say, okay, do I need to do any prep for the next session? And my rule of thumb here is only prep what I know. So if the players ended the session and I had no idea where they were going, I didn't know anything, I resist any temptation to do prep unless it's building up a sect that I just need more information on, or, you know, basic sort of setting maintenance. I don't prep anything in anticipation of the players dealing with it. You know, if there's a lingering complication, yes. If there's an active NPC doing something, yes. But otherwise, I'll just say, okay, you know what? I don't know what's going to happen, so I'm not gonna prepare anything related to the party. If I know where they're going, so in this case, I know they went to Kusha. That was their destination. I know why they went to Kusha. I know what they're... I will sit down and I will think about, okay, they're going to see this person. These people are here. What's going on in Kusha? Are there any local... You know, I might start to flesh out the scenario a little more. But again, it's not necessarily going to be all that involved. I'm not going to create like a super structured adventure there. I'm just going to make sure I have the details so that when the players get there, they're free to engage with it. I think the real key to a sandbox is really honoring the idea that the players are going to engage what they want to engage. They don't. So you don't want to, I mean, you can have adventures if you want. Like, you can definitely have planned adventures in a sandbox, but you want to be careful about how you structure them. I tend to create situations and scenarios, not a structured adventure. And that tends to work better because you're less married to that. There's not one particular way to approach it. If you have the situation, the players can approach a situation from any different angle they want. If you have an adventure that's structured and there's a hook and there's all this stuff, that starts creating problems, I think, in a sandbox context. There might be exceptions where you'll want to maybe have a particular type of evening, like maybe you want to run a Halloween adventure or something. The exceptions exist, but generally I think you want to adhere to this kind of thinking. And so, you know, once I have all those sort of things and then I've sort of considered what all the NPCs and groups are doing, I think I'm pretty well set for the next session. Now, something I do want to talk about is, you know, you start a session and things start happening and you're rolling on random tables or NPCs are somehow getting introduced to the party. Something I've noticed with myself is that what makes these moments for me work is something that I would think of as GM immersion. It's very tied to the living adventure concept where you're treating NPCs all as full characters. You're treating them the same way you would treat a PC. And I think what happens the longer you do that is, obviously we know about players getting immersed in character. There's lots of debates about how you do that, how you don't do that. What, you know, I'm not getting into that here. I just know that for me, because I GM a lot, and I play too, but I GM probably more than I play, I experience what I would think of as GM immersion, but I think it's different from players. Players tend to get really immersed in a single character for a prolonged period of time. When you're running, you know, multiple NPCs in a session, like just this past session, I ran 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I ran like 6 different NPCs in a very short session. It could have easily been 20 in another session. So you're running all these NPCs. But the more you do that, you sort of instantly dip into the character and it's like you immerse instantaneously. It's like rapid onset immersion. That's sort of what I would call it. It's just like you are you're just instantly in the character. And so I think that's a key to making sandboxes work, because I think one of the chief complaints people often have when they talk about sandboxes or hex crawls, and for the record, I don't consider my sandboxes or living adventures hex crawls. Characters will travel through wilderness regions, but I don't think of it as a hex crawl. That's just not how I think of this style of running a game. There's crossover, but my priority is on the NPCs and the PCs and that. But one of the complaints that people sometimes have, or one of the fears they have, is that nothing will happen. My players are just wandering. What's going on? Well, that's one of the reasons why you have random encounter tables. It's also one of the reasons why you as GM can make things happen. Now, there are different criteria for why you would do that in a sandbox. Some groups want a very naturalistic style of things, and so they want a clear cause and effect. They don't necessarily want things happening just so that they happen. I take a little bit of a middle approach here, where, again, this is drama and sandbox, and so I have no problem introducing active elements, you know, through NPCs. And so I think this GM immersion is very important to that, because when you're immersed in an NPC in that way, you instantly know what they're thinking. It's like you just know what they want, and you know how to play them and what they should say back to the players. And I don't quite know how to explain it, but it's like a chemical reaction where it just leads to interesting things. Like, you know, again, as an example, the situation where I had the sect member go and try to poison the party, that was sort of, you know, me instantly popping into these characters. Now, what that sometimes means too is I may, like, and again, this is an old character, so I hadn't read their entries in a long time. I read them right before I ran them. But what it does mean is that the character might become something slightly different when you pop into it than what's on the page. Generally, it doesn't. But sometimes that can happen. And I think you should go in the direction of whatever this character suddenly feels like to you, that you should stick with that. I think there's just a sense where once you start talking, like if you have an NPC and you haven't played them before, and you describe them and you have a list of motivations and all these things, you want to keep those things. But sometimes you have a personality in mind that you put on the page, and then you play the character and you realize, no, the character is totally different than what I had written down. I think if in that moment you realize that, provided you're not doing it for deceptive reasons, provided it's a genuine, this is the character moment, you should go with it. But generally, you know, you're following whatever you got written down. And in this case, you know, I just knew this is what this character would do. It was instinctual that this is what they would do. They would go after the party and try to stop them, you know, so they don't spread word. And they wouldn't even, you know, it wouldn't be something where the sect leader has told them to do that, because they're just going to go and do it, and they don't want the sect leader to even have to make that decision. The sect leader may have if they stuck around longer, but they want the sect leader to not be responsible. And so, you know, that was, you know, that's, again, it's just sort of an example of what I mean when I talk about GM immersion and sort of getting into these characters in this way. And every GM's different. Everybody's going to have a different approach to this. But for me, I really interface with the sandbox through the NPCs. That's what makes it work for me. That's how that's how the world comes to life. And again, that can, you have to keep in mind, NPCs include monsters, they include bandits, they include anybody. And what you want to do is you want to develop this ability to do rapid immersion into the character. You also want to develop the skills to kind of very quickly characterize an NPC, not to the players, not saying, oh, this NPC is, you know, morose and reticent. No, not like that. What I mean is you want to develop the talent of, and again, not like in a literary way. You're not making characters for a literary novel, so you don't have to worry about it in terms of building up this really elaborate internal world or anything. But you need to have quick ways of sort of figuring out who this character is, you know, what, and the sort of things that the players are going to notice about them and the driving motivations, you know? So, you know, and I think in Wuxia, that's one of the best genres for this sort of thing. It's one of the reasons why I think Wuxia campaigns have been so successful for me, is you can just keep coming up with character after character, and Wuxia lends itself to making very stark, interesting NPCs who may live or die. They may stick around for 10 sessions, 100 sessions, or they may die that moment. You don't know, but you know that they're going to make an impression, and the players are often going to remember them, even if they just get hacked down in the next 10 seconds. Again, I would take a page from how Wuxia operates. Its costuming is very important. And so obviously this isn't a visual medium, but you can convey to people, this character has really massive bushy eyebrows. Oh boy, these eyebrows are particularly striking. You know, things like that will get a character to stick in their mind. The weapons they use, the mannerisms that they have, the sort of bravado they carry themselves with or not, you know, those kind of things are just signatures of the genre that, I don't know, it just works very well. And I find I have a much easier time with a genre like this than with a genre like fantasy. I've probably gone on too long on this topic, but that's the core concepts here. If I have to sort of reiterate what I said, is number one, only prep what you know is coming. Don't prep anything that you don't know is coming, because you don't want to start railroading, or, you know, if you prep stuff in anticipation and the players haven't even decided to go there, you might be tempted to kind of get them to go there. So that's why I suggest not doing that. Updating, you know, you got to update your session log. If you don't remember anything else from this list, the session log is the thing that I strongly advise people do. You know, NPC deaths, in crucial details like the loss of arms, you know, what different groups are doing. So after this campaign, I do have to consider, okay, what is the Shaoze sect going to do about this? I mean, they're on the grudge table, but do they have a plan? I need to start thinking about, well, what does the leader of Shaoze sect think? And so I have to kind of sit for a little bit, contemplate that, and then make a decision. And then you want to, obviously, like I said, update your grudge tables. And then, you know, get comfortable with the idea of anytime the players have, like, okay, if you're running a game like this and the players have an encounter and it's random and it's like a 1d10 bandits, give those bandits some personality if you can. You're not going to be able to do it every time. I certainly sometimes don't. But whether it's animals or monsters or bandits or whoever, try to give them, if you can, some amount of personality, even though it's on short notice, and some driving goal, because that can make the encounter more interesting. You can make an encounter with a tiger more interesting if you know what the tiger wants. And so, you know, that's all very useful. And I should say, you're going to have good days and bad days with this. Some days you're going to be on the ball. You're going to be like, oh, I know what this tiger's personality is. I know what this tiger wants. I'm ready to go. Some days you're going to feel more sluggish and you're not going to quite, you know, that's fine. You're going to have uneven days. But the goal is to kind of just sort of keep at it and do these. You know, you don't have to, not every session needs to be perfect. I think the idea, one thing that I see a lot of gamers do is they sort of get these lofty ideas about what the perfect section is supposed to be, and they get upset if it's not the perfect. You know, this is more of a grind than you can get locked into a cycle of spending a lot of time prepping months and months for really short campaigns because you want them to be perfect, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that if that's what you like doing. But there's another approach, which is this, where you show up every week and you run the game and you have these tools that you draw on. And if the session was great, the session was great, but you're going to have highs and lows. And that's just the way it is with this sort of thing. And so I think that's a healthier approach. It's sort of like if you have poker night, you don't expect poker to always go a particular way. You know, this is a gathering of friends for a game. And if you embrace the game element, there's a lot of surprising things that can unfold at the table. You know, I was not expecting the players to hack off this woman's arms during the encounter. I thought they might kill her. I did not expect it was because I forgot that the player in question had an issue with poisoners. You know, there were other things I didn't expect. So, you know, I didn't expect, for example, this is a perfect example. The way that the sect leader was embarrassed was he offered to teach the player a counter because the player had given him this magnificent sculpture. The player rolled like a 10, which is a total success in the game when making the sculpture. And so, you know, out of a sense of reciprocity, he teaches him this counter. And it's the Hidden Fist of Yanchi. It's a punch to the neck when somebody is attacking you. And so he says to him, you know, strike me. And the player rolls, and I think he got a 9 or a 10, and the sect leader rolled his counter, and he got like a 4. Or no, he got, you know, he got like a, I think he got even lower than that. I can't remember. He whiffed, and he didn't succeed. And so it was an embarrassing moment for him, and then he said, okay, strike me again, and then it worked. But for a master who's the leader of a sect, having this nobody that he's trying to teach do that, that's very embarrassing. And then he was going to, before they left, he was going to perform music. He's a very famous musician, so he's going to play the flute for them. And he wanted the character who he had trained, who was also a chef, to take inspiration from the song and use that to sort of inspire his meal that he prepared. And he rolled a 2 on his flute roll. And so the sect leader just, it was just the worst performance he probably ever had. Now, this is a man who's supposed to be the two things he values. It's right in the sect that they belong to. The two things they value are Kung Fu and the arts. And so he just embarrassed himself on both fronts. So it was a tremendous loss of face, which is, again, why the member of the sect went to poison the players. But then, to add insult to injury, the player rolled for his cooking, and he got a 9. And, you know, I mean, it's not a 10, but it's a really, really good. That's, you know, 9 out of 10. So so the sect leader had to reluctantly acknowledge what an exquisite meal it was. If you're not embracing the game element, those kind of things don't happen in a game. So, you know, that was all. This is a great sect leader. In a movie, he would have blocked perfectly, and he would have punched the guy in the throat, and he would have performed the flute well, unless it was like, you know, a movie that's sort of intended to sort of, you know, surprise you or be a little bit funny. But if it was like a standard movie, those two things would have happened. But we're using dice, and so we have to respect where the dice go, and that's where I think a lot of this kind of magic happens. Because as you can see, that led to a whole scenario where this person goes after them, poisons one of them, and then gets her arms hacked off, and then it leads to a grudge. And this was just something they were just passing through, and they're like, hey, the character had made a roll to see if they knew about the sect in the area, and it's like, I want to go pay my respects to the sect leader. And that's it was just almost pure chance that the entire thing even happened. So just to add to that list, embracing the game is like a really important part of this too. That doesn't mean it has to feel gamey. It doesn't have to feel like a video game for sure. I don't like it when my games feel that way, but it does mean embracing the role of the dice, and then using that for the things that follow from it, like the drama, like the NPCs, like all this stuff that's going on. So I hope this is helpful. I'm going to try to continue doing these. Again, you can listen to the first podcast on this where I talk about living adventure and clarify what I mean by that word. But I think that it's helpful because I get a lot of questions from people and stuff. And so I'm just sort of trying to explain how I run the game and what my philosophy is at the table. Again, I don't care if you follow anything I say. If you don't want to follow it, fine. You know, it's not going to ruin your game if you got a better way to do it or a better way that works for you. But I would say you listen to this, think about it, give it a try. It's worked for me very well. So anyways, that's it. I will talk to you later.